I'm Nora Flaherty. It's 5:30. Ahead on Main Things Considered this evening, Governor Paul LePage staffers questions about their knowledge of the Goodwill Hinckley-Mark Eves controversy and a possible new life for an old Lewiston convent. Those stories in your Main newscast just ahead. First, national and world news from NPR. This is Main Things Considered. I'm Nora Flaherty. First on the program today, in political news, the legislature's Government Oversight Committee heard sworn testimony from senior staffers of the LePage administration. The committee grilled them about their roles in a controversy surrounding the governor's threat to withhold state funding from a nonprofit charter school after it hired Democratic Speaker Mark Eves as its next president. As Mallory reports, the staffers' memories were at times distinctly different.
Governor LePage's senior policy advisor, Aaron Chadbourne, and former Acting Education Commissioner Tom Desjardin told lawmakers that they never made any explicit threats to Goodwill Hinckley officials that state funding was in jeopardy over the hiring of Speaker Eves. Committee member Anne Marie Mastracchio, a Democratic representative from Sanford, pressed Chadbourne on his testimony.
If you didn't have anything that you could or knew that was going to be held over them, what was the point of what you were of the whole conversation?
Again, Representative, I don't engage in the type of thing where I hold something over someone. And if that's something that you do, that's a decision for you to make.
And Desjardin says despite the governor's public comments that he didn't want the $530,000 payment going to the school, he did not tell Goodwill Hinckley board chair Jack Moore that the money was in jeopardy.
I never said to him, this is going to lead to the loss of the money. And I wouldn't have, because even after the governor said, I don't want them to get the money, I've on many occasions seen the governor a week or two later say, well, new information, things have changed, fine, go ahead and send the money.
Both Chadbourne and the governor's chief legal counsel, Cynthia Montgomery, were subpoenaed by the committee. Desjardins appeared voluntarily. The proceedings were interrupted during the testimony from LePage's chief legal counsel, Cynthia Montgomery, who asserted attorney-client privilege. After a rare executive session to discuss the legal nuances, Montgomery returned and continued answering questions. Rich Abramson, the school's acting president at the time of the controversy, testified that LePage had made clear to him his feelings about the hiring of Eves.
There was a few profanity words that were used in describing the speaker and the speaker's work that I'm not going to share.
And Greg Powell, chairman of the board for the Harold Alphon Foundation, told the panel that LePage made clear to him that the state funding for Goodwill Hinckley was in jeopardy. But Powell says while he expressed concerns to the school about that danger, he never threatened to pull the foundation's funding.
We had never concluded that we were going to pull funding. We had never intended to communicate that. We hadn't even had a meeting to talk about the circumstance to decide what we were going to do.
But the threat of losing Alphon Foundation money is exactly what the school's board said prompted them to ultimately withdraw their job offer to Eves. The committee meets next on December 3rd to discuss their findings and any next steps they may take in this matter. For MPBN News, I'm Mal Deary.
You're listening to Main Things Considered on MPBN Radio. Still to come, remembering Judith Magyar Isaacson, who died this week at the age of 90. First, though, an old vacant convent in Lewiston could have a new life as a residential program for women survivors of addiction, prostitution, and trauma. A local organization's raising money to model the program after an operation called Thistle Farms in Tennessee. Today, the founder of Thistle Farms will speak at Bates College about her work and how it helps women. Patty White has more.
In the nearly 20 years that Becca Stevens has run Thistle Farms in Nashville, she says she's learned that the path that leads women to life on the streets often starts in childhood.
On average, the women that we serve are first raped between the ages of 7 and 11, and first hit the streets between the ages about 14 and 16. So the women that we serve truly did not end up in the streets or in prisons by themselves. It took a whole community to help them get there. And so it's always made sense to me that it takes a whole community to help the women come home.
The community that Thistle Farms provides is free housing for 2 years. Stevens, an Episcopal priest, says the women at Thistle Farms aren't considered clients. There's no authority in the residences. Instead, the women are empowered by supporting each other.
Story is an important part of how we understand ourselves and how we heal. And so to take our stories of brokenness, use them as compassion, and see them as an asset makes us pretty powerful.
Stephen says Thistle Farms has 23 sister organizations across the country, and she's hoping another one will come from Maine. That's something Clara Tammany hopes for, too, based out of an old convent a few blocks from the heart of downtown Lewiston.
Well, these key works, we'll see if mine works.
Tammany is executive director of the Center for Wisdom's Women in Lewiston, a drop-in center originally started by nuns that seeks to create a safe space for survivors of trauma to connect.
I have run this women's center down the street since the nuns left in 2008. And there's not a week that goes by that I don't wish I had some housing for someone.
The Center for Wisdom's Women is trying to raise $1 million to renovate the convent to create Sophia's House to provide women that opportunity. Tammany says the convent has been empty for about a decade. It's dusty, there's debris on the floor and peeling wallpaper. But its charm comes through, like in an old staircase.
A lot of old places you go in, they have fake paneling on the walls, and the woodwork's been painted, and this has never been changed.
On the third floor, Tammany wants to put in 6 apartments that will provide free 2-year housing for women in recovery. The first floor will be a communal space. In between, on the second floor, will be 5 permanent apartments. The rent will provide income to sustain the program, and the renters will support the community through mentoring.
The thing that makes us unique is that we tend to each other in community and tend to the inner spirit of the women who come, which is another added piece that often is ignored.
Bethany Bernard says that approach made a difference for her. She started coming to the Center for Wisdom's Women last spring.
I was going through a hard time, didn't have many friends or people I could trust.
Bernard says she's shy and used to isolate herself, but she instantly felt welcome. And a few weeks ago, she started volunteering at the front desk.
Because I am so shy, that is not something that I would have even pictured doing. And this place has just given me a lot of self-esteem and self-confidence that I can be at the front desk, greeting people, helping people. So this place has done a lot for me.
Clara Tammany says she also plans to include a job skills and income component at Sophia's House, also borrowed from the Thistle Farms model, in which women make and sell natural beauty products.
The karma of this building is right, and it says something. It was built for women. We need to put women back in it.
Her goal is to raise $1 million within a year and open by 2019. For MPBN News, I'm Patty White.
Finally, this week, the world says goodbye to Judith Magyar Isaacson, the Maine-based author and teacher. Her memoir, Seed of Sarah, detailed her journey from childhood in Central Europe to the realities of life under Nazi rule and ultimately to Auschwitz. But Isaacson's story didn't end there. The woman who would become an important figure in Maine education passed away at the age of 90 this week. She was surrounded by children, grandchildren, great-grandchildren, and her husband of 70 years. Jennifer Mitchell has more.
To a generation of scholars at Bates College in Lewiston, Judith Magyar Isaacson was a popular math teacher and educator and the school's first dean of students back in the 1970s. 40 years before that, in Hungary, she was the smartest kid in the room and the class valedictorian. To her friends, she was Jutka.
This was a true lady. Gracious. She was beautiful, inside and out.
That's Sharon Nichols speaking from her home in Florida. Nichols first met Judith Magyar Isaacson in 1989 when Nichols was director of the Holocaust and Human Rights Center of Maine.
She was working on her book at that time. And we just traveled a lot together. She was very candid when she spoke about her experiences. And she didn't have a lot of bitterness, which I always found amazing.
I was born in Kaposvár, Hungary. That's a southwest of Hungary, a very assimilated area, in July 3, 1925.
That's Isaacson telling her life story on tape in 1993. It's now part of the archives at the United States Holocaust Memorial Museum in Washington, D.C. Born Judith Magyar to a middle-class family of Hungarian patriots, young Judith was a star pupil who dreamed of going to college. Her parents kept up with the world news via the BBC radio reports, and her childhood was an active, happy one. But she got her first taste of racism in the late 1930s when she was chosen to perform at a school recital.
And during my recital, there was a little girl of 13, there were hisses and nasty calls against me. And that was the first moment that I had to use some courage. I went on anyway and finished the recital.
And it wouldn't be the last call for courage. Instead of heading to university, Judith, at the age of 19, along with her mother and her aunt, were transported to Auschwitz, where they were stripped of their clothes, their heads were shaved, and they were sorted like livestock. Isaacson says when she saw her mother was being sent to another part of the camp, she defied a guard and went after her.
So I just ran after her naked, and I expected him to shoot me in the back. And I just still feel, you know, remember that feeling to expect that bullet to come. And it didn't.
All three women survived for nearly a month in indescribable conditions until liberation. One of Judith Magyar's liberators was a soldier from Lewiston, Maine, Irving Isaacson. In what Nichols describes as a fairy tale romance, Judith and Irving were married days later. The couple returned to Maine, where Nichols says Judith, now Isaacson, got busy with the rest of her life.
She still had her dreams. And she pursued them.
Judith Isaacson went and got that university education that the Nazis had interrupted. Armed with an undergraduate degree in math from Bates College, then a master's in 1969 from Bowdoin, Isaacson taught mathematics at both high school and college level. Then, in 1975, she was invited to apply for an important position at Bates.
She once told me that when she was interviewed to be the dean of students, the interviewer said to her, well, did you ever live in a dorm? And she said, only Auschwitz.
And she got the job. Judith Magyar Isaacson went on to hold a number of posts on numerous nonprofit and education boards, received honorary doctorates from several universities, and of course published her best-selling memoir, Seed of Sarah, in 1991. Next month, she and Irving would have celebrated their 70th wedding anniversary. For MPBN News, I'm Jennifer Mitchell.
And Judith Magyar Isaacson will be remembered with a service at Temple Shalom in Auburn tomorrow morning at 11. Let's check in on the weather now with our meteorologist, Paul Cousins.
A powerful storm is grinding across Ontario and will deliver periodic rain to Maine with areas of fog overnight, ending south and west after midnight. Temperatures rising a bit, then falling slightly towards dawn. Over northern and western Maine, tomorrow morning fog and rain will taper to showers breezy. Central and down east Maine, the showers will end early, but clouds will remain. Southern Maine, expect a mix of sun and clouds. Windy, mid-40s north to upper 50s south. Saturday will be dry for most, windy for all. Showers and flurries will pepper the mountains in the county with some accumulations over the higher terrain, mostly cloud with a stray shower throughout central and down east Maine. Expect a blend of sun and clouds from the Sebago Basin, Booth Bay south, 40 to 50 north to south. Sunday, the choice day of the weekend, variable sunshine throughout the state, breezy. This is meteorologist Paul Cousins for the Maine Public Broadcasting Network.
And that's Maine Things Considered. Thanks today to Ed Morin, A.J. Higgins, and Barbara Caritti. A note before we go, Becca Stevens from Thistle Farms, the organization that's hoping to be a model for the Center for Women's for Wisdom's Women in Lewiston's residential program for women who are survivors of trauma, will speak at Bates tonight at 7:30. Definitely check that out if you're in the area. Thanks for listening to Maine Things Considered. I'm Nora Flaherty.